And now, the super genius, Mark Madden.
S.T. Hola, good sir.
Hola.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
My solution is, give me my cake and eat me, too.
The X at 105.9.
Filling in for Mark Madden, but not really and not ever. I'm Dan Kovacevic of DKPittsburghSports.com. And I'm really happy to be joined right now by the Steelers Radio Network sideline reporter, radio host, creator of CraigWolfley.com. And, of course, former and always offensive lineman of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Craig Wolfley. How are you, Wolf?
How you doing, brother? Nice to hear you.
It's good to hear from you, my man.
This
segment is sponsored by 84 Lumber, helping you build the right way since 1956. Wolf, I'm going to ask you, I've never done this before, a non-Steelers question. I like to do this sometimes when stuff crosses over. But when you see the state of the Pittsburgh Pirates the way they are right now, you're a guy who lives here too. You're a guy with a lot of pride, and you're also been part of a franchise that's done things the right way for a long time. What do you think when you see it, even from afar?
Wow, you know, I'm so one sports.
I know you are. I know.
You know, and I got to tell you honestly, all my baseball experiences as a youth playing were horrible. Why did you ever play football? I mean, my giftedness came in the fact when I realized that I couldn't hit anything smaller than a person. So baseball was out, okay? So that's just the way it was.
Wow. Okay, that was so much a better answer than what I could have hoped for, Wolf. Let's talk about the state of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And as you look at the standings right now, and you're around that team and you hear them and you see that vibe, I really like it right now. They know they're in something. They're not looking at 2-4 and saying, you know, we're a 2-4 team, are they?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, you know, this is a team that's been, in many ways, hanging on by their fingernails and pulling themselves back from the abyss a couple of times over. I mean, if you can imagine, as I'm walking off the field in L.A. with Randy Feetner, the offensive coordinator, we're walking up the ramp after just winning a game against L.A. Chargers, right? And I just smacked Randy on the back. I said, great job, you know. And I could see, he just looked at me with kind of that wry look like, you know, if you could only experience what I have. Think about it. You got a Hall of Fame quarterback you come out of camp with. You're ready to get going. Your whole offense is built around this Hall of Famer and in this communication you have with this guy. Suddenly he's down, not for a game, not for half the season. He's done for the year. So then you've got a second-year guy, Mason Rudolph, who's got great topside ability. You think, okay, you know, now I got to bring him along, and I got to put some extra things in here, and I go with the shotgun, and I go with some of the jet sweep stuff, and I've integrated some things, taking a big risk here, but I want to give him the tools that he needs to be able to get off on a good foot. And just when I'm ready to let this guy fly out of the nest, and boom, he goes down. Now I got a guy named Devlin Hodges, who is better known for his duck calling than his arm as far as being a passer. But yet he comes out and he's got the duck ready to win. And kudos to Devlin. On a big stage, he comes through in a big way. But you can only imagine the relief flowing off for Randy as he got off that field. And I think, to me, in my mind, that summarizes the first six games of the season.
That's beautiful,
it's been tough,
man.
It's been a battle, but they've been hanging tough.
And I think it gets maybe underappreciated the extent to which the changes have to happen. We saw, you know, the Wildcat offense come in to kind of buy Mason another week, right? But this one, you didn't even have that option because Jalen Samuels goes down. James Washington, nobody talks about it, but he's gone down too.
Great points. Yeah.
And these, it's not just about the quarterbacks. Randy had all kinds of options taken away from him, and yet he stepped up with his game plan. But so did a couple other individuals on that offense that I want to call some attention to here. One is James Conner. You know, we'd almost been finding a way to couch him as if he needs help or he's like some secondary running back or whatever. But when Samuels goes down, James stepped up and started running forward again, didn't he?
No question about it. I think part of that, you have to look at, you know, and this is what I try to tell people. Look, we're all human beings. You know, and these guys go out there, and sometimes the mental RPMs are running higher and hotter than they are other weeks. That's only a natural thing that happens to human beings and performance-oriented things like football. And I would say that that offensive line was revving red hot. You know, I mean, they understood, look, we're down to our third string quarterback. We're down a running back, though James is the lead dog. You know, we got to get him some running yards. And James was the recipient of some long handoffs, if you will, those passes that get you in the open. And now you got to make something out of it. And, of course, James did. James ran hard. I mean, he was busting like a Bronco going up there. And slamming into people, just what you want. You want to see that. You're invigorated by that as an offensive lineman. So it was kudos to James. That was a great job. Again, a great job by the offensive line and starting to come out and get this thing going forward. And I think more and more, as I look at it, there were a couple of trap plays. I saw Dave DeCastro run. I saw the big Ragu, Ramon Foster run. And the backs tried to cut it because they had such good success early on cutbacks because that's just, they were one of those chase linebacker groups, you know, the Chargers. They didn't step up much. They overrun.
Right. They over-pursued, yep.
Right, but when later in the game they ran with some traps and stuff and they tried to cut it back inside, if they'd stayed on the guards outside hip, they might have had a couple of big chunkages as far as running the ball. So it's still one of those things that's a work in progress. The running game always seems to take some time. Some years it comes faster, some years it comes a little slower, but I still think that these guys have what it takes to be able to run the ball successfully.
Craig Wolfley of Steelers Radio Network, of course, is my guest. Wolf, that leads me right into my next question, and it's right in your wheelhouse. And I'm Boone? Looking. You either tell me that I'm wrong here or whatever, but I've had the impression here that for a decent portion of this season, the offensive line hasn't been what it's capable of being until like the last couple of weeks or so. Not to put words in your mouth, you tell me if I'm wrong or are they coming around or was it just too many necessary adjustments that had to be made because of the different quarterbacks, because of the different personnel? What have you seen?
Well, I think obviously the offensive line hasn't been quite what they have been in the past in the running game. They're still there pass protection-wise.
These
guys have been built around the concept that you've got a Hall of Famer that you're protecting, so you got to make sure. So one of the things that I really believe in my heart is you start to go to a three-point stance, you roll over that front foot, ball up your fist, ball up your neck, and you just have a go. And I think that they're getting more into that now because of the structure of the offense you've got to run with having been down to your second and your third-string quarterback. Part of that is just you think you get comfortable from a two-point stance, and because so much of this is the zone stuff, one of the things you do, you're in that two-point stance, your hands are on your knees, and you snap the ball, and the guy over you is in a three-point, and the very first thing that happens is you stand up, and you're in a two-point stance, and you're already high. You're much higher than you need to be, you know, and it's hard to sink down from a two-point stance and reload and come under and up, so I think that's helped them in being able to come off the ball a little bit and get after it. The offensive line, again, as I said, sometimes, some years, it just seems to take a little longer to be able to get that running game in sync than other years. And this has been one of those years where part of it has to do with, again, when you have a Hall of Famer and he's no longer in there and he's been there for the last 16 years, it's a little difficult to snap your fingers and reload an offense and got to come up with some schemes that fit the other player taking his place.
Well, I'm glad you said that because after the game in Santa Clara against the 49ers, Marquise Pouncey basically pulled me aside in the locker room and said, not so much. He wasn't calling anybody out or anything. He just basically said, look, you have to understand, we've had the same guy behind us forever. And people don't understand the differences in quarterbacks. It's not, he's just getting the ball in a shotgun and just releasing it. He'll step up in the pocket. He'll step up a certain way. He'll roll out in a predictable way, the way we saw to a certain extent with Devlin Hodges rolling out to his right. That comes with significant challenges, as we saw from the way Mason Rudolph was injured, by the way, to an offensive line. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a comfortability factor. You know what this guy's going to do. You know what Stephen's going to do. You know, in your mind, you have this understanding and this copacetic thing going on. You got that ESPN thing going on where you know what he's thinking, and he knows what you're thinking. You know what I mean? And so you're all one in that thing, but suddenly you've got another voice in the huddle. You've got another voice at the line of scrimmage. And so you've got another playing style. However, it's you know, it comes about, it's going to be a little bit different no matter if you run the same play or not. And then you got a third new voice in the huddle and a third new voice at the line of scrimmage. And that does take a little bit of time to rework and reload. And I thought what you saw in L.A. was an offensive line of five guys who, you know, just decided, look, we got to rev this thing up. We got to get it going. You play a little bit harder. You play a little bit. It's not that they're playing harder. I shouldn't say that, but the mental RPMs run hot. Mm-hmm. You know, and you stay mm-hmm. after it. And the guys know, deep in their heart, offensive linemen know. When you're clicking, you know when you're clicking. And when you're not clicking, you know when you're not clicking.
And it's always, yeah, it's always defined by the group, too. You never hear one of them say, it's, you know, no. It's like, well, I felt like I was really sharp today. You know what I mean? It just doesn't happen.
Exactly. Except for the one time Punch lost it in Indianapolis for us. We point the finger. No. Then slide that baby in, you know.
I have one last question for you, Wolf, and it's on the other side of the football. We have seen in Pittsburgh special defensive players, and it's not a word I like to use lightly. For me, that's a Sidney Crosby, Andrew McCutcheon, Rod Woodson kind of term.
Mm-hmm.
When we're talking about special players, are we seeing one now on the defense? Are we seeing the beginning of the career of a truly special defensive player?
Are you talking about Devin Bush?
Oh, my goodness. Of course I am.
And I'll go over the other. Devin Bush, obviously, is a young man who's just come on like gangbusters. Four
yes.
fumble recoveries. He got a couple of interceptions. What I loved about this kid was watching him when he missed a tackle or two in the second half. And you could see, all right, it was kind of like he had a moment. I'm standing on the sidelines. I'm watching him. And he's got this one of these frumpy moves on himself like, okay, I'm punked at myself. And I
yeah.
And he comes back and he starts making the plays again all over. And that's just the education of a young man. And he certainly, this guy, I don't know what it is, but certain players, the Kevin Greens, the Greg Lloyds, you know, LeVon Kirkland, all these guys. I mean, Jack Lambert, Jack Ham, going way back. The ball seems to find them as much as they find the ball, you know, and that is just, I think that's what it says about this young guy. Real quick, though, I got to tell you, I saw the most complete pass rushing performance I've seen yet from T.J. Watt out there, out in L.A. I mean, whether it was trapping the outside arm and getting the outside edge on Sam Tevy, the right tackle.
This is why you hesitated when I said special. Oh, okay, I get it.
Yes.
Okay.
I got to tell you something. T.J. Watt has been playing great, but this was, if you go back and put on that tape, this was a complete pass rushing performance. Uppercut, spins, swims, trapping to the outside, bull rushing, speed to power rush a la Kevin Green. I mean, everything
That's
was
great.
Thrown at Tevy, and you just saw him in the face and in the ear of Rivers here.
Nah, that's beautiful. I'm glad you did that because that's in my face too. Because I've been thinking so much about Devin Bush and his takeaways and his pursuit and his foundation that he's formed for himself going back to the first days in Latrobe where he was just going to get the basics right. You know what I mean? That was something that Ben Roethlisberger talked about a lot when he saw him. He said he's not even going for splash out here. He's just trying to get the basics right. So when he missed a couple of tackles against the Chargers, he was going to punish himself. My goodness, do I not mean to leave out the very special level of play that we're seeing from T.J. Watt and all of the ancillary benefits that come with it. You know, it's not just about him. It's about the room that he creates for Bud Dupree, who's also having his own impact from the other side. It's about the pass rush they can generate from the inside as a result of T.J.'s incredible pursuit from the side. Yes, I love that. That's why you're the best, Wolf.
No, but I'm just glad to be amongst the people just hanging out watching it. I'm humbled to be there. You know what I mean?
You know, I'm humbled to have you on, Wolf, so that you could share earlier that as a baseball player, you had learned early in life that you couldn't hit anything smaller than a person.
That's all I got, brother. You know, I was not one of these five-star, you know, athletes coming out of school. You know, you are what you are. You know what I mean?
That's the best. Greg Wolfley, thanks for being on, man.
Thank you, brother. Good being with you.
When we come back, we're going to take more of your phone calls on The sad, sorry state of the Pittsburgh Pirates as a civic institution, and what can be done about it? What can be done about it? No, I don't want to hear cynicism, pessimism, this will never happen, whatever. I want to hear what actually can be done. I want to hear constructive stuff. 412-333-9939 is the number to call. Constructive stuff that can be done to change the front office, to change the ownership, to change the direction, to change the culture of the Pittsburgh Pirates. 412-333-9939. Let's make this happen. I'm Dejan Kovacevic filling in for Mark Madden. You're listening to 105.9 The X.